Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome in. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Keiser with you on this Tuesday. So much to get into today. Georgia, they are the national champions once again, back to back. That's one thing that I know. We will discuss that. The other thing I know, Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad, I just combining them, are both deaf.
Yep.
So I know that. And Todd Downing is no longer the offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans. And I start with that, Michelle, by saying this. Mike Vrabel, you are a damn genius. You played us all yesterday, and you know what? I can't even be mad about it one little bit. Because you can't tell me for a second he didn't walk into that press conference not knowing what he was going to do, or he had already done it.
Oh, of course he already knew. And we were actually talking about this on Robbie and Rex Road yesterday, saying, you know, okay, all these firings are coming out. You know, how long will it take him to fire Todd Downing? Because we were pretty positive that that was going to be the next move for this team. And Joe brought up, you know, will he do it before the press conference? And I was like,
no.
There is no way. I said, you know what's going to happen? I said, this press conference is going to happen, and we're going to find out like an hour later that mm-hmm. he fired him. And exactly what happened. I did a radio hit in Alabama just speaking about the Titans season.
Oh, look at you.
And where they go from here.
I did a radio hit in Alabama.
They specifically asked about Todd Downing, and as soon as I got off the phone with the station, I refreshed and I saw the report that he was fired. I was like, well, what timing that was.
Yeah, I was on the phone and I'm like, why is my phone blowing up? Oh, there it is. But look, I think Todd Downing's office had already been cleaned out. I think he knew. You don't wait. I mean, you know, that's the thing. Like, you know, I kept telling people it's either already done and he just hasn't said it yet because he don't want to talk about it and explain mm-hmm. his decision, because that's very variable of him, or he's not going to do it. And he gave you some context clues yesterday mm-hmm. with some of his answers. The you know, that's one thing that I kind of took away from it. Here was context clue number one. Vrabel was asked, and I think this is Jared. Vrabel was asked on evaluating Downing and how much the DUI would factor into that.
Into your decision about whether or not you're going to retain Todd after the DUI?
I mean, I think our behavior and our actions outside of here are critical, whether that's, you know, mine, the coaches, the players. I mean, I think that that's something that's extremely important and critical in how we carry ourselves outside of here. But we'll have those conversations, and I'll have meetings with coaches, and we'll go from there.
Okay, so I take that one. I was still, after the press conference, 60-40 that Downey was gone. That was that was kind of my feeling after the press conference. I came in here, talked to Caroline and Derek, and I said, yeah, I'm still about 60-40 that he's going to be gone. Now, knowing what we know now, I think it had already been done, but I still was like, I wouldn't be shocked if he brought him back. But that answer kind of made me think of, okay, he's still pissed off about this. Now, the other question that raises from that is, did he fire Todd Downing because of the DUI, or did he fire Todd Downing because he was a bad offensive coordinator? Or is it a little bit of both?
Well, the way I look at it, too, and let's, like, go back a year or two when he hired Tim Kelly, right? It almost gives me – it reminds me of the whole Shane Bowen situation. He was the pre-DC, right? So he brought his guy in. He sat under the DC for a year, brings Tim Kelly in, and I know that Tim Kelly –
well, they didn't have a DC. I mean, that was the thing.
He was it, but he wasn't. They wouldn't actually name him that. So Tim Kelly comes in. I would say he's probably the front runner for this position, but, you know, there are other people, obviously, that have been thrown out there, too. But it was a combination of both. And another question that Vrabel was asked by TD was about loyalty.
Yeah.
And about how, you know, traditionally we've seen Vrabel hire within or promote within. He wants his own guys. And he brought up again loyalty to his coaches and just saying, like, you know, we take into account everything that happens, loyalty to the team inside the building, loyalty to the team outside of the building. And as soon as he said that, I thought, you know, he didn't fire him during the season after the DUI, but he finished out the season. And I really do believe, and we may never know, right? That was Mike Vrabel's decision or Amy Adams Shrunk's decision. But I really do feel like that played a pretty big factor in it, because he kept mentioning, you know, outside of the team, doing what's best for the team outside of the facility, not just in here, not just on the practice field, but outside of the facility.
Look, conspiracy theories start at 2:00 on this station, but I will say that I do wonder if maybe there was a little bit of writing on the wall. You know, maybe he wanted to either fire him after the DUI or suspend him, and he was told, hey, let's just let it play out and let some other things play out. And then a week later, you know, they fired John Robinson. Because as soon as John Robinson got fired, Downey got a reprieve, because you couldn't do that. There was just way too much at that point. And so Amy Adams Strunk had kind of taken that away from him. But I go back to my original question. Did he fire him because of the DUI, or did he fire him because he was a bad offensive coordinator? And both can be true. Both can factor into it. But I do hope that part of it is because he was a bad offensive coordinator. Because if that's not even a factor at all, and we'll never know, then that concerns me.
No.
Because Vrabel, that means Vrabel didn't see what we all saw.
Well, I think you can't not mention the fact that the personnel he had to deal with.
Sure.
And I think that plays. I mean, Vrabel's always like, players got to make plays. And I feel like a lot of the times when he was even asked about Todd Downing in press conferences, every week to week, right, what's going on with the offense, I feel like a lot of it was put on the players this year and about the players need to make plays.
He called players
and
out.
He never really mentioned, or I guess you could say threw Todd Downing under the bus. But, I mean, we saw him throw his best player, Derrick Henry, under the bus yesterday, talking about his fumbles. So
I have thoughts on that too. But yeah, I just, one, I'm glad he made the move. It was the right move. Nothing against Todd on a personal level. I don't really know him on a personal level, but it was the right move, because Vrabel has to now go into protect his job mode. And part of that is fixing this, and you got to fix it with a new offensive system. Now, I agree with you. I think Tim Kelly is the front runner. I was the one that actually had the story of that he was going to be passing game coordinator, and the writing could have been on the wall then that Todd Downing was on notice, because you're bringing in an experienced play caller, somebody that he knows. Now, I would not rule out somebody else that he knows. I think Bill O'Brien could certainly be in the conversation, who's currently at Alabama. But that was the head coach that hired Vrabel, that Vrabel worked for. Obviously, they know each other from back in the days with the Patriots. There's a lot of familiarity there. You brought up loyalty. So I could see Billy O being a – and look, I wouldn't hate that. I think Billy O was a terrible general manager. I'm not as high on him as a head coach as some others, but I think he's a good offensive mind.
I think it just depends on what he wants.
Yeah.
Right? But does he want to stay with Alabama or does he want to go back to the NFL? But I also look at it, too, of why
I
would
think
you
he'd come back?
Why would you hire Tim Kelly as your passing game coordinator?
Yeah, but
if
I mean,
he's
Tim
been
Kelly
in that position, if he's been a coordinator before, you
sure.
know, the way I look at it is it was a hey, sit here for a year and then we'll look to.
Yeah. I mean, and that might be it. And look, he's probably going to get interviews to be OC. I heard Jared throw out some names that have the title of offensive coordinator with other teams, but they don't call plays, you know, because you have a lot of head coaches that call plays. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that could be a possibility. I don't see Vrabel changing the system. I think it'll still be that kind of Shanahan-based system that they've run since he got here. But I think it'll be interesting to see. And this is a big move for him because, again, I never really thought that his job was in danger, even with the collapse. But now is where the clock starts to tick. Even though he's going to have a little more power, he's going to have more say with the new general manager. They're going to be even more connected at the hip than he and J-Rob mm-hmm. were. It's still now it's like, all right, you're right. There are some things that were not your control, but now it's on you.
But now these are your decisions.
Yeah.
You are deciding what is best for the franchise. So, you know, prove to us you can do that.
The other context clue real quick was this one. Vrabel was asked about the offensive line. And when the moment he answered this question and gave this answer, I knew Keith Carter was gone.
Assessing the offensive line, is it more a matter of trying to just revamp and get more players in that maybe are healthier and be better there? Or is it a situation where maybe you have to kind of tweak the scheme and how you're going about things?
You got to protect your quarterback in the National Football League. When you don't, what happens? Well, they get hurt and they turn the ball over. So we need to find guys that can protect the quarterback just because that's what happens. It showed up, you know, throughout the season and, you know, kept some guys in and Chip and all this other stuff. And, you know, we'll just have to, you know, keep searching for them and keep finding them and keep working with them.
I know he was talking personnel there, but the tone, I heard that and go, Keith Carter's gone. Whether it's his fault or not, he's gone. He is the sacrificial lamb.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to make it. He's been up and down since he's been here as the O-line coach, but I just knew right then and there. So that was a little bit of a context clue on that. Also, they fired secondary coach Anthony Midgett. I'm not super surprised by that. Again, I kind of put that in the same category of Keith Carter of not all on him, but you know, you got to sacrifice somebody. Somebody's got to take the blame.
They got to take
fire the
blame
the
for it. You can't fire the players, exactly.
And then offensive skill assistant Eric Frazier, which I don't exactly know what that is, but he was let go as well. We'll take your reaction. Todd Downing out is the offensive coordinator for the Titans, 615-737-1025. Yes, we will talk about Georgia's shellacking of TCU and how the SEC is the most dominant conference in college football, and I don't want to hear any other argument about it anymore. We will do that all coming up here on Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Are you optimistic that Ryan will be your starting quarterback next year?
Well, I mean, we have a lot of guys here that are under contract. We have a lot of guys that want Ryan to get as healthy as he possibly can and then, you know, go and be our quarterback and, you know, figure out things that are going to, you know, help us win. And then, you know, that's the case for a lot of guys. A lot of guys are, you know, that are under contract that finished the season not out there. You know? So let's get everybody healthy and let's see where everybody's at, and then, you know, we can make some decisions.
Non-committal Mike Vrabel yesterday addressing the media back here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. You can weigh in anytime on our phone and text line to all the Titans changes, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We're broadcasting live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic here with you. So we know about the coaching changes now, which he was brilliant in that he did it after the press conference because
that was planned.
Oh, it was totally planned because let's just be honest. I don't think, like, I've heard Mike say he hates, or people say that Mike hates the media. I don't think Mike hates the media. I just think he hates having to explain himself.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not there every day. Maybe with my new schedule, I can be there more, get to know him a little bit better. But I feel like he has a good relationship with you all outside of maybe one individual. But overall, he has a good relationship. He's very Belichickian in that I'm the coach. I make a decision. I don't have to explain my decision to you.
Yeah.
That's that. And I, honestly, I'm fine with that. And, you know, it's something that as I have ascended into management, you know, you read quotes and books and, okay, what's the best way to get the best out of people? And, you know, I've tried to do a little of that of sometimes I have to make a decision and I don't really have to explain myself. It's just, this is the decision. And that's Vrabel. And so what he did yesterday, like I said, I applauded it because I go, you know what? You knew the plan the whole time. You sat up there and looked everybody in the eye and answered these questions, and the deed had already been done. I mean, you know, you were already, the shovels were already digging the holes in the behind the facility. I mean, it was done, and he did it. And so I have no issue with that whatsoever because now he doesn't have to explain it. It's done.
Well, and as far as, you know, the relationship with the media, like, some of the stuff that's not shown on the live stream of the press conference, like, before he even started speaking yesterday, he was joking with Terry McCormick
because
he accidentally shut his recorder off post-game.
Yeah, I heard that.
So you know what I mean? And he does, I think, have a good relationship. A lot of times coaches have, you know, some of the coaches I've covered, like Jim Boeheim, for instance, has absolutely no interest in talking or having a relationship with the media. He comes into the podium and says what he needs to say, and then he leaves. Whereas I agree with you. And as far as, you know, the firing of Todd Downing, he has 100%. He hears things of sports talk radio talking about firing Todd Downing. He's seen social media. You know, he has seen all of that. And I'm sure it's very frustrating to lose the way they did, to be on a 7-game losing streak, to have to talk after losing in Jacksonville. You're not going to the playoffs. Now you got locker clean out. Hey, I'm going to tell the players, you know, coach is fired, but I just don't even want to have to deal with this with the media right now. And now he doesn't have to talk for a very long time.
Yeah. And I mean, look, the thing is, and he knows this too, we're like elephants. We never forget. And so when he does, I would assume the next time he talks will be at the combine. Maybe he's a part of a GM introduction,
a GM,
but he'll have to address it eventually. And he will.
Yeah, and he will.
And you know, then he'll probably have a new OC in place and, you know, can deflect to that. Well, Todd's not here anymore. This is, you know, Bob, our new OC, like, whatever. But the other thing that he deflected on was Ryan Tannehill. And I thought, and Nick, I have misordered this, so I'm sorry. We're going to go to the next Vrabel one. That's my bad. But so Terry McCormick asked the initial question of, do you anticipate Ryan Tannehill being your starter next year? And I heard Jared talking about this yesterday, and I thought he made a very excellent point. And I mean, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way towards Terry, because Terry asked the right question, but Mike is going to find every out he possibly has to not answer a question the way that you want it answered. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to be just straight direct with him where he has to answer it. And he said, do you anticipate Tannehill being your starter next year? Well, you gave him an out because he could say, well, he was hurt. So Jared follows it up with this.
So you don't feel comfortable right now committing to Ryan as the starter for next year?
Well, I mean, he's our starting quarterback. If he was healthy, he's our starting quarterback. You know what I mean? So that's all I can tell you. And right now, there's a lot of guys that aren't healthy and that didn't finish the game. I mean, I think we're going to talk a lot of hypotheticals. I
2 days after our last game. So, you know, happy to talk a lot about things that I can answer, but I can't answer things that, you know, are in the future.
Jeff Fisher used to always say, I hate dealing in hypotheticals. And every coach hates that, even though, I mean, we love it. That's what we do. That's what we live for, is to live in hypotheticals. Jared said next year, Vrabel goes back to, well, if he was healthy, he'd be our starting quarterback this year. Talking about this year.
Like right
and
now.
And then he goes, you know, there's going to be a lot of hypotheticals. The truth of the matter is, I don't think Vrabel knows.
I don't think he does either.
I think this is a thing that he hadn't made a decision. I mean, if he and the new GM decide, hey, Ryan Tannehill's going to come back, he's going to be the starting quarterback, I don't think he has an issue with that. I don't have an issue with it. Now that I know there's going to be a new OC and the offense is going to look a little different, I'm fine bringing him back. You know, and I kind of think they're at that point. Now, you got to figure the contract part out. I mean, that's a lot of money. And you got to figure out what the future is. That's another part of it. But if they run it back with Tannehill, fine. I have no issue with it. We talked about this yesterday. If you go into full rebuild, one, it takes a while, and two, 9 times out of 10, it doesn't actually work. So you're not in a position, you're picking 11th. For the people that think you can come up with a trade package with Chicago, like, you're okay, sure, you could do that. But then you're going to have a franchise quarterback in Bryce Young that you'll pick number one overall and nothing else.
Quite literally nothing else.
Like, I mean, you won't have anything else. That's why it doesn't work.
This team.
Yeah.
Well, and as soon as the Tannehill questions started to be asked yesterday to Mike Vrabel, you know, I assumed he wouldn't answer it on the spot, Chase. I think you made a really good point that he doesn't know. I mean, Ryan Tannehill told us that he had tore multiple ligaments in his ankle, had to get the surgery. So we kind of got an answer, or we finally got an answer on that. He had to get the surgery. He said he's going to start jogging this week or next week. But, you know, who knows how he'll come back and how he'll respond to the surgery and what type of quarterback he'll be able to be. Who knows what Malik Willis's progress in the offseason will be, and they decide, you know, okay, maybe we will go through a rebuild and he'll start for a year. Who knows if they figure out some way. There's pretty much 3 or 4 top quarterbacks that people are talking about. Anthony Richardson, Will Levis are bigger question marks than Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. But who knows if they could figure that out? Who knows if Brady would want to come here? So I agree with you in the fact of Mike Vrabel doesn't know what he wants to do yet. I also thought something that was very, very interesting, which I didn't know when Corey Curtis brought it to my attention yesterday, was that he said this is the first time Ryan Tannehill has spoken on Locker Cleanout Day.
Yeah.
I did not know that. And I think that says something. I really do think that says something. He doesn't know what his future is like here. He doesn't know who's going to be the OC next year. He doesn't know what Vrabel wants to do.
Well, I think part of that, too, is he got beat up, and rightfully so much for not speaking last year that I think he kind of had to this year. But, I mean, because that was the thing. Like, I like Ryan Tannehill. I'll give him some passes on some things. But, dude, you threw 3 picks in the playoff game, your team lost, and then it took you 3 months to face the cameras. That I had an issue with.
But if he's never done it, he's never spoken on Locker Cleanout Day. I get the way the season ended.
That shouldn't factor into it. Like, that you gotta be the starting quarterback and just be the guy and take it at that point.
Yeah, but he never has been. If he's never spoken.
No, I know. But and then I got an issue with that. That's what I'm saying. And that's why I think that he ended up doing it yesterday, because I think he's been called out on that and beat up on it. And again, rightfully so. Like, hey, you're the starting franchise quarterback quarterback. You gotta talk. That's part of it. That comes with it. And I mean, so many times, you're gonna get me off on a soapbox for a second, but so many times with athletes or people that are in the spotlight, when it gets tough, we want to protect them. Like, oh, okay, well, they had a rough game. They don't want to talk. Sorry, that's kind of a part of the job. Good times and bad times. You don't get to always go out and talk when it's good times. I mean, sometimes you got to face the music, and that comes with it. But I won't get on that.
You're not letting me rebuttal.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, like, I'm not saying it was great that he didn't speak, but what I was saying, I mean, he spoke after the game. He had to. He speaks after every game, whether they win or lose. I know that locker cleanout day was the day to speak, and this is last year, so it doesn't even really matter at this point. I just thought it was interesting, other than the fact that people gave him crap for not speaking last year, that there's so many changes going around and there is a potential he couldn't be here next year that he decided to speak.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll see. I think he will be. I think he'll be back. I do not think they will move
That'll
on.
That'll be the big question for the next
And Viking
days.
Matt, I love you. Aaron Rodgers is a Titan next year. You want to know where Aaron Rodgers is going to play next year? The Green Bay Packers.
Yeah,
that's
financially not feasible.
No. No.
For any team.
If he retires, I wouldn't be 100% shocked. I mean, there was a little bit of, you know, nostalgia with him, keeping the jersey, looking around. But he also said in his post-game press conference, I'm going to take the emotion out of it. I'm going to take some time and not be emotional and then make a decision. I either think he retires or he's a Packer again. So I don't see that happening. And Tom Brady's not coming here either. So I think Ryan Tannehill will be the starting quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. We'll get back into the Titans coming up in a little bit. But there was a football game last night, and woof, that's all I will say about that. But we will discuss Georgia back-to-back. That's coming up next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Coach, you told this team to leave no doubt. How did they do that with this dominant performance today?
Really aggressive plan, not holding back anything. We wanted our kids to play without fear. And all year I told them, I said, we ain't getting hunted, guys. We're doing the hunting, and hunting season's almost over. We only got one more chance to hunt, and we hunted tonight.
That's Kirby Smart. The back-to-back national champion, Georgia Bulldogs. Yes, very well done, Nick. Bringing it back as they absolutely dominate TCU 65-7. They cover the over on their own. I mean, it was never a game. Stetson Bennett goes out a champion, back-to-back champion, 18 of 25, 304 yards and four tutties on the night. And look, I'm watching this game. I'm doing the Preds game last night, and I'm mad at myself. So I'm gonna self-report for a second, because last week when the line came out and we knew the matchup, I said Georgia all day. Georgia will dominate. You know, I was never a believer in TCU. I tweeted that I didn't even think they should be in the playoff and got blasted for it and gave my reasons why of, you know. In you know, the schedule in the SEC was far superior. SEC bias came out. I got called out for it, whatever. And I should have just listened to my thoughts and my gut and rolled with it. But I drank the purple Kool-Aid and let people talk me into it that, you know what, TCU, they're scrappy, and how they bounce back from Kansas State and played against Michigan, and they're going to hang tough. They're going to hang in this game. And I allowed myself to believe that. And I'm just like sitting there going, you idiot. Like, what are you doing? You knew better. Because my whole premise all year has been the SEC is better. It's just better. The SEC is the best conference in college football, and there's no argument for it. Not from the Big Ten, not from the Big 12, not from the ACC, not from the Pac-12, not from the Sun Belt, not anybody else. That last one was a little bit of a joke, but it just isn't. And I'm sure people are going to be like, ah, the SEC bias is coming up. Well, you know what? If the shoe fits.
Well, I mean, Ohio State, a field goal away from beating them.
I understand that. I understand that. And you know what? That was going to lead me to my next point. You cannot overlook the performance from the previous game. Here's what I mean by that. Kansas State beats TCU. They're pissed off for greatness. They get into the playoff, and they took it out on Michigan. And Michigan overlooked them. I think Michigan overlooked them. Okay. But they had a lot of emotion in that game.
Oh, I agree.
And I think that caught up to them moving into this. The other side of that, I think Georgia might have underestimated Ohio State a little bit. And Ohio State came in with just reckless abandon, ready to go after it, and they squandered a chance. I mean, they should have won that game, and they ended up losing it. And Georgia realized that, and that's where Kirby was like, hey, boys, you got away with one. Let's show them who we are.
Well,
and then they just let it fly.
Well, and I think that we've seen that from Georgia earlier this season, right? When they had that close game against Mizzou, and then, you know, they showed people. Or they've had some games where, are you smiling at a text we just got?
Yes, Rick, you are people.
we saw Georgia have some games where they looked breakable.
Yeah.
But then when they turned it on, we talked about this on Robbie and Rex Road. We almost felt like Georgia they flipped the switch. They had some games where they would play to their competition. But then, for instance, that Tennessee game, when they heard everybody saying, you know, Georgia's not that good. Tennessee's going to beat them. Georgia's shown their weaknesses this year. This isn't the defense of last year's Georgia team. They're like, They flipped the switch. They dominate Tennessee. And I almost feel like that was this game too, right? You mentioned they overlooked Ohio State and by Kirby Smart and Stetson Bennett's faces in that semifinal game, I think they were like, holy bleep,
mm-hmm.
We survived and are going back to the national championship game, because they were very, very close. And then they took it out on TCU, and I think you're right. I think that they had a Cinderella season. I do think they were a good team, and
I'm not saying they're not.
I think they deserved to be in the college football playoff because they were untouchable in the season they had and the schedule they had. But I agree with you. The SEC is the SEC. So, I mean, I fell asleep at 17-7, not going to lie. And woke up to 65.
My dad would say that was an ass whipping. You missed that. But this is my message for everybody that doesn't understand just how great the SEC is.
Whether you like it or not, learn to love it, because it's the best thing going today.
Thank you, Rick.
Ric Flair.
Atlanta
drip.
Zone. Yeah, a little Ric Flair drip. But it's just true. Now, the other part of this is, I tweeted this out. I want to know if you think this is, again, conspiracy theory start at 2:00 with Jared. But I want to know your thoughts on
this.
Okay,
let me hear it.
Kirby knew Daddy was in the building. Kirby knew. And Kirby's like, hey, let me show you what's up. I beat you last year, but let me just show you what's up and flex a little bit. I know that's crazy to think.
No, it's not crazy to think.
But,
I don't think.
But I think there's some truth to it. And you know that Saban watching that the whole time is just like, just steaming. Because here's my other part of this point. I threw this out to some friends. The system is what the system is. I get it. And the committee got the top four right, mm-hmm. based on what the system is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe that their job is to put the four best teams in, and I think that you could make an argument for some other teams, but with what the system is, that's the top four. Let's say for a second that it was a top six, and you took the top six as currently ranked, and you made that the playoff. You give Georgia and Michigan a first-round bye.
Okay.
So you have three TCU. They would play the sixth seed, Tennessee.
Bama or Tennessee. Tennessee. Okay, Tennessee.
Ohio State as the four would play the five, which is Alabama.
Yeah.
Let's put your Superbook sports hat on for a second. Neutral site for both. How would you handicap those two games? TCU versus Tennessee, Ohio State versus Alabama.
Are we talking Tennessee with Hendon or without?
Same Orange Bowl team.
Okay. Neutral site, I would say... Because let's remember, this Tennessee team is coming off that blowout loss against South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. But then they beat the brakes off Vandy.
Okay.
I know.
It's Vandy.
But still.
Okay. Yep. I would say TCU is a 2.5-point favorite.
I would agree with you.
Okay.
I think that you are spot on with that. Now, if it's Hendon...
If it's Hendon, Tennessee's a favorite, I believe.
Yeah, Tennessee's a favorite. But with Joe Milton, TCU plus two or minus two and a half.
Minus 2.5.
Yep. Okay. Ohio State, Bama.
I think Bama's a touchdown favorite.
We are on the same page. We are 100% on the same page. And I think that if you have that scenario, Bama beats Ohio State. I think Tennessee beats TCU. If it's the same, and again, I'm saying without, well, I'm saying it's the same Orange Bowl team. So there's no Tillman and there's no Hyatt. Even though if they're in the playoff, I think those two play.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you factor that in. But I think Tennessee would beat TCU. And so then you would have Georgia play Tennessee. I think Georgia beats Tennessee again. You have Michigan, Alabama.
Alabama.
I think therefore, here we go. SEC again.
And the thing is, I mean, I still believe that Alabama was one of the best four teams in the country, maybe the best. And they didn't make it in because they had two losses. And that's the format for the playoff. You know, it is expanding, but I do believe if we had a expanded playoff this year, Alabama probably would have found themselves right back in Monday night's game and could have had a great chance of winning. But I agree to your point that Kirby knew Nick Saban was in the building yesterday.
Oh, of course he did.
And it was funny. I turned on the broadcast, and I'm like, what is Nick Saban doing on this broadcast?
Well, one, he did a great job.
Of course. But I was like, of course he finds his way to be at that game.
But I got to say this. So David Pollack, mm-hmm. who does a great job for ESPN, kudos, my friend. This was hilarious.
And Georgia, obviously, you've seen in the past couple seasons now, really, they've taken hold of college football. They did an unbelievable job. This is a young football team. This isn't an old football team with a bunch of guys losing. Now, listen, the NFL can take its chunk out of any team. But
okay, so you hear that clip and go, all right, cool. Yeah, that's a Georgia guy saying Georgia's taking over college football. Here's what you don't see. Saban was sitting right next to him, and he looked right at him when he said it. And the look on Saban's face was priceless.
Oh, he was evil eyeing
him. Oh, he was
him.
So pissed.
He's like, do you know what you're saying and who you're sitting next to right now?
Now,
dude?
Right. Now, if I'm Saban, I just, you know, I just show the rings. Like, that. Just you just lay them out on the table and it's done. The argument's over. But the stones on David Pollack to say that in front of Nick Saban – I was just like, okay, young man, okay, you go.
He's like, I'm going to say this on a broadcast. I know this is
not. He knew exactly what he was doing.
But I agree with him.
Right now, yes.
Right now, yes.
But daddy will be back.
I really hate how you call him daddy.
I mean, that's what he is. He is the daddy of college football. He will be back. Bama guy, I mean, he probably texted all his players and said, you better watch this. You better watch this right now.
And hey, get probably ready. Sent him the clip.
And get ready. And no, but watch the game. Like, just get ready.
Well, and unfortunately, he's losing his generational quarterback next year. Well, end of this year, but
yeah,
next year before the draft.
That's stopped them before.
Well, I know. But Bryce Young, I mean, the team, I mean, they were the best one of the best teams in the country because of Bryce Young. And yes, obviously they have five stars all around, but
yeah.
He never lost them a game, technically.
No, but.
But really quick, Chase, heading to the text line. Greg A. says, Chase, you will get this comparison. Nick Saban is Ric Flair and Kirby Smart is Triple H. The evolution has begun.
Oh, yeah, I totally get that.
I
think that's a very good comparison.
I'm assuming it's wrestling.
Yeah,
because
Rick was the legacy of, you know, the 80s and really the 80s. And Triple H was like the 2000s, you know. So that
our text line is blowing up and it's funny right now. Kyle texts in and says, in quotes, I took that personally, Saban.
Oh, look.
And he will remind us next year.
Oh, when it's Georgia, Alabama, and the SEC championship, he will be reminded. Because Nick Saban can look at Kirby Smart and go, look, I may have taught you everything that you know, but I haven't taught you everything that
I know. Oh, there you go.
I always love that line. Coming up next, we will get to our daily power play. Predators win 3-0 last night. We'll do that here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
It's time for the Daily Power Play.
Score! A power play goal for the Predators.
Covering the Predators and the NHL.
With a shot that stopped by Searle.
Now on Chase and Michelle.
It is Chase and Michelle, the Daily Power Play, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic here with you. Our daily feature around 9:45, and we will have Max Herz here in just a second, who you heard on the call last night as the Predators defeat the Ottawa Senators 3-0 to win their fourth in a row. They've gone 3 in a row on this road trip and have had a very, very good start to that. They're on a point streak right now, so you got to like the hockey that the Predators are playing. I heard David Poile with Robbie and Rexrode this morning. He even had, and what's funny is, you know, even when they've won, he's been like, okay, still need consistency, want to see it. But now I'm starting to hear like, okay, I like kind of like where the team is going with what they're doing right now. But a boring game, if I'm being honest with you, last night. But both teams have goals challenged and disallowed. It looked like Matt Duchene had scored, but he was offsides. Brady Tkachuk, same thing. But Roman Josi with his 10th of the year. Jeremy Lauzon, I still don't know how that wasn't Tanner Jeannot's goal.
We thought it was Tanner's for a second. Thought he got the monkey off his back.
But he did not. So he gets that goal, his second of the year, and then Philip Forsberg with his 16th of the year as Scoresberg season has officially begun.
Well, and I think one of the guys we need to mention again, coming off his huge performance in Carolina, UC Saros with a shutout last night. This guy has been performing at such an elite level, and I can't find the specific stat right now, but Gover tweeted it out. Something crazy along the lines of, you know, 100-something shots on goal, and he's saved like 97 of them or something.
Yeah, but he's just been freaking amazing.
Well, right, he has 102 saves in 2 games, Michelle.
Yeah, that's it. That's the stat. Thank
you.
Yeah,
102. Our Preds guy, Nick, you're the best. 102 saves in 2 games. I mean, just let that sink in for a second.
I mean, it's awesome. Now, you want to give him more help. I mean, it's 60, you know, this 67 saves or whatever it was 64. Is that what it was? 64.
It was 64 saves on 67 shots.
That was a little bit of an albatross, but you know, I think that he's obviously deserved to be an all-star in the way that he's played, but he's getting the run support, and that was something that David Poile talked about. I mean, the fact that he's getting help now, it's not just him. You know you're going to have to rely on him some, but here's the crazy part. It was his first shutout of the year.
Yeah.
And I almost – We can't seem to find Max, but we'll get him on eventually. But I heard Max at the closing point of the third period last night say, working on a shutty, and I'm like, Max, you don't bring it up. What are we doing?
Well,
we don't talk about it.
I did see Nick tweet
it's like Fight
something.
Club. You don't talk about Fight Club.
I did see Nick tweet something about a shutout, and Gover tweeted at him.
You did it too.
Like, You almost jinxed it, Nick.
No.
What is wrong with you? You play hockey.
Dude, I don't care. If I see something that is about to happen, it's reporting. You want to be aware of
it's
what
reporting.
Is going to happen. I don't care.
You're reporting it.
I have never cared, and it has never changed.
Hang on. Your argument is you're reporting it.
Yes.
That there is a shutout brewing and that you feel the need that you have to report that.
What's wrong with that? Do you just want donuts
because
in the morning?
People know what it is. They don't need you to tell them.
Oh, everyone knows it's coming.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean,
but when a stat pops out, you definitely need to be aware of it. And last night, too, another thing is the Preds are now 13-1-2 when leading after the second period. So
see,
I was encouraged.
You can
that's
report
why
that.
I said it.
That's a good stat to
but
report.
But that's where I led with, okay, a shutout is coming. So that's exactly why I felt even more inclined to say what I did.
I mean, Jeremy Gover has every right to call you out for
100%. I don't blame anybody for not trying to call me out.
I mean, you even play hockey. Like,
what's
you
wrong
know,
with that?
You know how crazy superstitious hockey players
can
be.
Listen, it's
I'm
hockey and baseball. You just can't say it. People, I said it sitting on my couch one time and got yelled at. I'm like, oh, looks like, don't say it. Don't say it. But the stat I was looking for from Jeremy Gover, UC Soros in his last six periods, 103 saves on 106 shots. What is that? 98.9% or something?
It's pretty damn good.
Pretty perfect.
Yeah, is what it is. I'm reporting. I had to report it so the people would know. My goodness. I mean, Robbie, like, back me up on this. I mean, we don't need to report shutouts. People can see it on their own.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that everybody saw that nobody scored for Ottawa last night. Yeah. Love you, though, Nick. Way to go. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Robbie.
Insert
Stanley.
Pat on the back.
That was good. So the Predators, next up, will take on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Another big test on this road trip. Try and go 4-0 on the road trip and win 5 in a row. What is it, Ryan? Yeah, thank you. Ryan of Chicago agrees with me. It's the equivalent of acknowledging an ongoing no-hitter. Bad mojo.
I was talking about who I got yelled at for almost acknowledging it.
You don't talk to the pitcher. I mean, like, if a guy's throwing a no-no, he's sitting in the dugout by himself. He's not talking to anybody. You know, the home team broadcast probably won't bring it up. I mean, come on.
Everyone knows. I mean, everyone does know. It's the elephant in the room. But then if you do say it, you know you're going to get crucified for it.
Anyway, Predators and Maple Leafs tomorrow. That is the Daily Power Play here on the show. Coming up next, we will dive back into the Titans. How much power does Mike Vrabel now have? We will discuss that coming up next on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 23-11 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.